to somehow call everyone together.
Check, 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 hello.
Do you want like rhythm or just what is it?
Greetings. Can everyone hear okay? The tone is good.
Yes.
Projection. Projection.
There's no formal introducer, so the four artists tonight are introducing their own self. I am Greg Bem, and I am visiting here, Goa, but also India for the first time from Seattle, Washington. And thank you all for being here. And if I haven't already met you, I hope to meet you after the reading as well. So what am I doing? I'm reading some poems. And I think you already knew that. But I'm going to read a few new poems and then talk a little bit about where my stuff's coming out of, kind of like the scene, if you will, or scenes in Seattle, and also my history doing work in Cambodia and in Philadelphia, specifically related to the literary arts and poetry. And then I'll read one final poem that kind of summarizes or kind of capstones that talk. So this series was written recently, and a lot of the stuff I read subsequently is very spontaneous, and it's directly related to the immediate environment with little reflection, with little return to the work for revision and so on and so forth. I've dabbled a lot in revision, but my most prominent works are immediate. In a dream, I see the face of a rose, and on its teeth are crusted gemstones. Memories of seldom glints in what lights, glucose levels of instability. The snare and talon of the sugar cube. Oh, and by the way, this is Simon Ocean on guitar. Thank you, Simon. In effect, alighted from the stage to affect her skin coated in shadow, a caramel conduction, miracle of drought, and murmur of magic and orange mutilation. And I dreamed destruction, a deadened Ganesha doll. The drool of the spine after the course. I can't take that, I said. It makes my body bleed. I dream of Donald Trump and I bathing together. We are in the Arabian Sea with crabs in our mouths. A quintet is designed to be a bomb. I dream everyone asleep. And the only waking moments are memories. Limbs become spiders crushed by heels. And we will not be healed when the darkness comes. And we will not be healed when we become spiders. Incineration by way of burning palms. The lack of a current of air. A flame fanned by observation. The quantum possibility is the electric spark. They were dead upon arrival before their own char. It goes without saying because the cows had their throats slashed, the blood improper, impossibly drained, and their faces vacant, a hollow like a web browser or a battery, emptied, utilized, and past tense. Or a giant lie. I pass the children whose skulls I want to crush. Their teeth could form a necklace and a rehabilitation. The city growls in celebrations and rampant glances, a cauldron of fatalism, the long streaks of a floodplain in pain. Each step looses a pebble or a fetus, and there are moans. Or I will end it, or I am sick of this shit. And there were crows with light brown feathers, whose bodies would be found only by the wind, breeze exhausted, streaked with strokes of pulverization. Damn the way the ponds hold the melted holy bodies. After the Ganpati festival. We were bloodied marble caught in valleys of garbage. There is no energy after the mineralized transformation. Speak of events like nomadic poor people bearing teeth shaped like novels, lacking inks and dyes. Beneath more marble, we are suffocating phantoms. Family of marionettes, three women and sunsets. There is a silhouette of dust and a feeling that the marching dead feminists can't ignore. And all the men's faces from all the smoking rickshaws stared like spit or shit scattered across the pathway. That's my most outsider poem I think I've written in India. I feel kind of guilty about it, but... The sound of a kitten screaming amidst the feet, bodes of bloated antibodies outside of the urge, the sound of our twin stars and our haunting history scraping across maps, and little but the names, little but names keeping us careful in this waking state. I went to sleep, mouthing mesh mouth. In a castle's wink, there was silence, and never did I see a lantern in the frost, and never once did I stir or tremble. The cost of a tropical sponge as it dries and disappears after use. Dubious at best, beloved mounted niceties, shudders and shallows and a partial breath level of cold, we watch the sun go down over the city of glass and pray for rain clouds to blur our reflections and pray we wake up from this sleep, this one, after Vancouver, BC. Finally, for this mini-series, when the shower courses back a mandala, wrist capturing pain waves and the air is still, the sky black along the edge of whenever our home sits. We pay for the unknown and the emulation of a boundary. We cope with our luck with a series of lengthening nights. So, thank you, Simon. Actually, if you want to keep playing while I'm just talking, that might make it a lot more interesting. I'm really fascinated in space. I'm really fascinated in wide open spaces. And I think that's rooted in most Americans that are not rooted to living in a city. And even if they do live in a city, there's this fascination with the great beyond, because for many, there is no great concept of the great beyond other than what they hear. And once you go into the frontier, you journey into the West, or you journey back east on the continent, until you actually do that, you're always in wonder of what great space is. Yet there's so much symbolically that the country is founded on, based on having space, based on having taken space, and based on having control of all of the space that is around. I'm mostly interested in it from the continental perspective. I'm sure there are many people who are interested in it from the empire perspective. But as it informs my poetry, I'm 30 now, about 8 years ago I started getting involved in this radical group of poets in Philadelphia, after having grown up in New England and having spent some time in New York. The poets were international and also from all over the country, but we started thinking about ways that we could be in the face of everyday life in Philly, and that involved going out onto the streets and reading to passersby. It meant turning everything into a stage. It meant distributing zines and chapbooks and single poems into people's mailboxes without their consent. Most of this poetry, because of the political nature of the city is mostly impoverished, and most of the people living there are either working class or working poor. Because of that being the tone of everyday life there, you see the wide spectrum. I consider it the most perfect image of America, because you see the wide spectrum of the wealthy in historic homes, in new homes, and you see all of the ghettoized areas and areas that have, you know, police lights spinning above buildings to indicate to people that they're entering an area where there is a history of crime. And these are predominantly and historically Black American neighborhoods, where people who have no relationship to that environment, who are this tall, are raised into an environment of oppression. That kind of antagonism and polarization led to a poetics of anger and sadness and activity. And we utilized the public spaces because they were public spaces and we could get our poems out. The poems I read earlier are hardly political in nature, in my opinion, but the ones that we were doing when I was that age, and it wasn't just young people, it was older people too, were meant to be an imposition and meant to cause some kind of change or stir some kind of emotion in the public and be outside of the constructed venue, be outside of the space that already has the capability of excluding some people, though I love venues too, including this one. Anyway, so that all went down and that was amazing and it continues to go on to this day. The poverty continues to go on to this day as well. And when I was 25, I moved to Seattle, still being an active poet. And Seattle was kind of the inverse, and it kind of is the inverse of a city like Philadelphia or Chicago or New York or any of the Rust Belt cities or any of the cities in the south of the United States, where there is a significant inclusion and a significant propensity for art. It is everywhere. It is taken for granted. It is of all the spectrums. Everybody that lives in Seattle, the joke is a writer. Like, literally not just claiming to be a writer, not like in LA where everyone is claiming to be an actor. I'm sure Bombayans can relate to that. But, like, everyone is claimed to be a writer in Seattle because many people are actively working on their writing and actively working on publishing and working on events and communities. So you have the wide spectrum. When I got there, I saw no soul in it. I saw a significant group of people doing wonderful things and a lot of people that had been part of transgressive communities since, you know, the 80s and the 90s. And there is a large LGBTQ community that exists to this day and is constantly being threatened. I saw all of that, but I saw formats for conducting the exchange of expression and the fostering of community and intimacy not really going on. There were a lot of institutions. There was a lot of money because Microsoft, Boeing, Amazon, all of these major companies exist there. And so people have been kind of injected, artists have been injected into this system. And in some cases, artists are making a living. You know, they're able to make $1,000 a month, US dollars a month, and survive and do events and host gallery installations. And it's wonderful for them. I mean, they're not living in abject poverty as an artist. However, a lot of the art that's going in there is all kind of this feedback mechanism or this loop of scratching backs and schmoozing and social graces that are continuing to marginalize people, continuing to take people out of the conversation, but at the same time, by the same token, also removing that intimacy, removing that soul or that purpose for why you're going into this space of consumption. Because we are all here tonight because we are consuming, whether it's consuming from listening to me or the music, or consuming the other art that will be presented later. And I wanted to get beyond that. It was kind of like a you know, the Situationists talked about it like 40 years ago. Getting Gideboard and all them, like getting out of the spectacle, getting out of the product, getting out of the consumption of a commodity. And so how do you do that? How do you go to a place, a city, and how do you create events that evoke change, evoke transgression? I mean, you're already an outsider and you're already, maybe you shouldn't even be there. Or maybe you are stepping on the toes of people who have been struggling and trying to do the work for so long. And how do you respect those boundaries? And so I joined a lot of the different communities that existed in Seattle. And then I tried to find a room for a new space, a new, not physical space specifically, but a new space of sharing ideas and sharing, having conversations and exchanging on a deeper level the philosophical underpinnings of why we're there. I created with two other artists, two other writers, a series called The Breadline, which lasted for 4 years, and it occurred in what is considered the last vestibule of old Seattle, which is kind of like the Nirvana and grunge Seattle, the early 90s brick and mortar, everybody is struggling to get by kind of Seattle before Microsoft existed. This was a venue that that was maintaining that identity called Vermilion. And it was a monthly occurrence, and there were artists and all sorts of interdisciplinary activists that were coming in, sharing their work, but also finding room to collaborate with people they would not normally do. And there was open mic, and there was an open mic of all disciplines. You had dance, and you had music, and you had poets, and you had sound artists, and you had visual artists, and it truly erupted into something that was newly a community. People regularly talked about how the space as a community and the occurrence as a community was completely unlike anything that was going on in Seattle. So of course my own ego was stroked, as were the egos of the other curators. But at the same time, we were truly encountering something that was being positively received by others that were from the area. However, I still felt that it was a closed environment. I still felt like the people that were working in the parking lots and having to work during a work shift that was going on somewhere on the other side of the city could not come in and be part of that community. They were still being excluded. So I attempted to create a supplemental experience, not through this specific event series, but through another series called Ghost Tokens that started occurring in public spaces throughout the city of Seattle, South Seattle specifically, because it was an area that was way more open and way more dictated by trendy peoples and micro communities that were like post gentrification. These all occurred outdoors, usually in parks. I mean, I've passed in the last 24 hours in Goa, I've passed like 3,000 spaces that would be the equivalent of spaces where this event would go on. And again, it was bringing in an interdisciplinary, very diverse group of people that could show their work in public in a performative way. So we had people that had political poetry on banners that would be shouting it from a megaphone in abandoned spaces in the south of the dome section of the city. We had people that were doing prayers in the Chinese gardens. We had people that were talking about the history of fireworks in the city in specific public parks. Like, all of these different things allowed us to be part in a more organic space, a more natural space, but also a space that was open to all. And it allowed people to truly challenge themselves and take risks in their art, where when you're in a structured venue, you might be more inclined to not step away from the mic and not walk through the audience and not, you know, go out into these areas that lack the confines or lack the rigidity or lack the structure that do a lot of beneficial things, but also keep people limited in what they're trying to express in their art. And a lot of the influence comes from modern dance, and a lot of it comes from performance artists and the Fluxists in the 80s that were doing work in unusual spaces, in unusual formats, and going back to like European movements in the early 20th century, the futurists and the Dadaists, we people that were participating in this art, were influenced by a wide variety of different types of artists. One of the major issues, and I'd love to hear maybe after the reading tonight if you have an opinion on this, but one of the major issues in terms of creating events of any kind in the United States is popularity. And it stems, obviously, capitalism and narcissism and selfishness and the American dream, and one's dream in general typically is rooted in the self. And many people host events or try to curate events with the idea that it is not a success unless it has an identity that represents popularity. And that was an issue that I confronted with Ghost Tokens and existentially thought more about, because many of our events only had 4 or 5 people in the audience. It was kind of very much the opposite of tonight. There was no sense of overwhelmingness. There was a greater sense of intimacy, but at the same time, it clashed with this idea of what is important and what is actually causing change. If you only have that many people there, what really are you doing with one's art? Are you in some kind of echo chamber? And so how do you go forward and kind of be more proactive in inviting people in? There, about 3 years ago, there was a push by several major arts groups in Seattle to create a literary crawl. And a literary crawl is essentially, some of you have probably been on a pub crawl in somewhere or been on a crawl in some capacity, but it involves multiple venues and it involves an active movement from venue to venue with art at each venue. In the sense of the literary crawl, it's poetry and prose writers sharing their work. And so we went from being in these pockets of the city that were unusual and open, completely open, being in the middle of the forest, to spaces that were well-known community centers, like this space here, a sequence of them, to kind of loop in a more diverse crowd. And also, going back to the Philadelphia events, inject ourselves, impose ourselves into spaces that would not normally be confronting the ideas of our art, or not be being confronting art at all. Mild success. I think that there were probably at least four people in the course of 10 events that yelled at us because we were being too loud underneath their home. That's the tension that we faced. We faced any kind of possible response that the public would give you. But at the same time, there was a lot of positive response by being present and doing something different and showcasing ideas that were in otherwise normalized and kind of consistent spaces. Finally, there were a couple of different events that occurred that really, really kind of summarized my experience, or not summarize, that's the wrong word. They kind of wrapped up in a nice little package my experience as a curator. There was one that occurred last June in this area called Tukwila, and it involved 25 different artists over the course of 11 hours doing a walk through all of these originally native spaces that have been preserved, tribal spaces that have been preserved, with a lot of indigenous individuals attending and sharing their art, as well as all types of other artists who were dancing and who were sharing fiction and prose and poetry and music and all sorts of different things. This kind of created a greater swath, but at the same time, all of the swaths of the work that was being done elsewhere. There was a lot of work that went into this event that ensured that there was a level of organic participation. People could come or go. Only 3 out of maybe the 100 participants stayed for all 11 hours, including myself. So people were very transient. But then there were also these established sites that allowed for a source of venue and stability. And it truly was one of the most significant things that I've done as an artist, but I think also one of the most, at that time anyway, one of the most significant things that the other artists that were participating were involved in. Just a few more ideas, and I'll read one more poem. I think a lot about the public and the private. As I said earlier, who is excluded? What is public? And what shouldn't be public? What things are better presented in a space where everyone knows each other or knows most people or are friends and amiable versus what types of offerings can be done better in a space that is open to all at the risk of being exposed and at the risk of other people being exposed, but also at the risk of conversation that is progressive. I think a lot about the idea of the ritual and the fact that we have created, curated temporal spaces. This is not necessarily a spiritual ritual, but the idea of us congregating and sharing our work in an intentional space is really interesting to me. I think about the personal and what people take out of it, whether it's Simon Ocean strumming away on guitar, or any of you in the audience today, or myself getting up here sweaty with a dry mouth, and what that means. And then I think a lot about where art is going in general. I didn't really talk about how the other parts of the Seattle literary world kind of responded to the new events that I was collaborating on, but there was definitely kind of like a vibration that I felt based on the influence of the people that were not only doing what I was doing, but also the people I was collaborating with. People were influenced, people were taking ideas or starting new ideas and kind of creating this golden era or this gilded era of presentations and experimentation in live events. I don't know if it still exists today. I feel kind of jaded by everything because no matter what you do, those systems will always exist. The money is there, and the money is going to continue to be there for a long time. And so there was always a tension between those people that were working within that normal system in Seattle versus the people that were doing down, like lower to the ground, more grassrootsy, kind of independent and unaffiliated things. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know that it is still a very exciting place to be. I'll be there for a little bit longer to continue to participate. Because I think that is really one of the most significant qualities of a community member is the active participation. And so, in so many ways, especially in America, there are so many people that just, for whatever reason, choose a new path for themselves and kind of have this comfortable level of abandoning community or realigning themselves to no longer be within that community that they invested a lot of energy and time in. And it's really, really sad. One of the events that I did in January, there's this Space Needle thing that exists in Seattle. Maybe some of you have seen an image of it. It was created about 51 years ago at the time of Seattle's World's Fair, which is really when Seattle became the capitalist powerhouse that it is. It was basically an event that was created to bring investors into the city, as well as bring people to live in the city. For example, they had entire events that were geared towards single women moving from the East Coast so that the men who were working for Boeing could have wives. That's how, like, procedural it was. Anyway, one of the many things that came out of this ridiculous event was the Space Needle, which is a ridiculous object. But it represents a lot of the obscurity of Seattle as a place, but also the defiant and overwhelming evolution of investment and capital in Seattle. And one of the major things that's going on right now is Seattle is too expensive to live in for most people, including people like me, who have lived there for 6 years. People are being forced into being more marginalized and ostracized, pushed to suburbs. They just can't afford any of the areas that were once inhabitable by people that are not wealthy or rich. And so I invited 11 artists over the course of 7 nights to meet under the Space Needle, and it was a public event, and share their response to the development and the growth and the significant changes that were transforming all of our lives and continue to this day. And so everyone was different. Every artist had a completely different literary contribution to the event. But after they all shared, I responded to all of their poems, and I published this book of poems for each of the artists, all based on their contribution. So I'm just going to read one, and this will be it for me. And this was after the sixth night, and this is a poem that was written for a very, very amazing interviewer and poet, Paul Nelson. Breathe the slaughter like birds breathe in light of morning. Rain patters upon drums, or perhaps drums are made of rain. Enlightenment to lighten within an investigation. Breathe in. Rain scatters amidst the walls of the man's lungs. Breathe in. Become the boy. Become the light scattering shades. Ask things amidst scattered birds as a distraction, or as beyond. The information comes in waves amidst the noise of ships and airplanes, the shouts of greenery beneath the flowering nature. The natural, the nature, no nature of awakening, but here or there, the nature of whole things, big ideas coiling around us like snakes, shadowy, withered in need, a cool and wet transmission, and there is a rhythm beneath it, economic. This repetition is utterly cosmological, so utter it. Boost your breath like regrades ripping moist earth. Touch your palm like an anagram escaping your lips. Remember the reflections of all the sounds of all the biospheres. Remember the slaughter inhaled through the geographies. After all these years of shades and drums, just rain. Rain finding calm. To will, to listen, if you can shout it, mix of knowing, tremble and thrust, become the meat and sit and soak, let the body escape, think time, let the history escape through us so that we may exist and live. Catch sight of the stars, for they will be your witness in the dark, before the sun eventually rises and carries the body outward. Ecstatic claims burrowing within us as we bumble around this makeup, this throb, spark of green along the ridges, this mix-up, this trickle along the tracks to those with lives coming, going, to those failing to notice or noticing fully, to those who have had chances, to those who have accepted and those who have lost out. Throwing the body's arms and embracing the rain. The rain, it still comes, and it is an arrival for the fittest. No shrug but in ideas, as large or as small as stone. Thank you. Thank you, Simon. And next up, no introductions.